So I'm going to call to order the Senate Committee on General Accountability and Government and for February 8th. And I welcome everybody. We're going to do a couple of bills today, just public hearings, but you want to tell us about the first one, Cheyenne?
Yes, Mr. Chair, you have two matters scheduled today, Senate Bills 87 and 90. And if you go in agenda order with Senate Bill 87 first.
Yes.
That measure has a subsequent referral to the JLIMT Committee and Joint Ways and Means. It allows the State Chief Information Officer to relieve state contracting agencies and public corporations from the obligation to obtain a quality assessment services when implementing information technology initiatives in excess of $5 million and permits the SCIO to require such services for initiatives under $5 million. It's applicable to advertised initiatives and to unadvertised initiatives implemented on or after the effective date.
Great. Dr. Pettit? Thank you for coming over to tell us about this.
Thank you for having me. Senator Riley, members of the committee, my name is Alex Pettit. I'm the Chief Information Officer for the State of Oregon, and I just wanted to offer myself for any questions regarding Senate Bill 87. 87, as read, will give us the discretion as to whether or not software implementation or system requires external quality assurance. Right now, if certain criteria are met, particularly around money criteria, then it's required that it have a QA, a quality assurance assessment on that. Generally, those run between 7% and 12% of the total cost to have a quality assurance vendor on that. For some software, as we're moving things, like as an example, Microsoft 365, as we're moving things from a technology that's run on a desktop to technology that's run in the cloud, that would or could fill the definition of a software implementation. In that case, for just the Department of Human Services, that will run several million dollars and would require QA on top of that. So what we're asking for is the authority to be able to omit someone from having to meet that requirement. That's really what this is. That's the essence of this bill. And I'm happy to answer any questions you all may have.
Well, that was pretty short and sweet.
Yes, sir.
Questions?
You bet. Y'all? And that comes from where?
Senator Riley, Senator Prozanski, thank you for the question. I was the Chief Information Officer for the state of Oklahoma for 4 years prior to coming here, and prior to that for 10 years for the city of Denton, Texas.
Oh, excellent. My wife is born in Denton because I was going to make a Red River joke, but I won't make that now.
There you go.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So that's the only person I have signed up for this. Does anyone else want to talk about this bill? Yes, come on up.
Never mind, sorry.
Okay, so we will be moving on to that. I'm going to close this public hearing and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 90. And who have we got beside? We have So let's bring up Steve. If Steve wants to come up, and let's bring up you. Come on up. Chelsea, I know Chelsea. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead and summary.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 90 has a subsequent referral to the Joint Legislative Information Management and Technology Committee and Joint Ways and Means. It requires state agencies and the Chief Information Officer to cooperatively develop a plan to consolidate information technology security functions with the SCIO during 2017, including the transfer of personnel, records, and property. It directs state agencies to retain unexpended funds designated for administration of functions being transferred, requires state agencies to cooperate with security assessment and remediation program, follow unification instructions, conduct and document completion of specified training, report information, and participate in activities as directed by the SCIO. Authorizes the SCIO to determine costs and collect payment from state agencies for information technology services for deposit into the State Information Technology Operation Fund. It makes the foregoing operative January 1st, 2018. It also creates the Oregon Cybersecurity Center of Excellence within the office of the SCIO to centralize cybersecurity information sharing between public and private sectors, serve as an information sharing and analysis organization for purposes of federal critical infrastructure protection programs, liaise with the Department of Homeland Security and other entities concerning cybersecurity, and promote the development of a cybersecurity workforce. Requires the center to draft and update plans as specified for biennial submission to the governor and legislature. Authorizes the SCIO to enter into agreements and accept funds as specified. Creates the Oregon Cybersecurity Fund and makes continuous appropriations for the center's operation and other authorized uses. Requires a report on fund balance and expenditures be submitted to the governor and the legislature biennially. Declares emergency effective on passage.
Okay, so we have the Secretary of State's office and the Treasurer's office. So whoever wants to start, go for it.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Great. Thank you, Chair Riley, members of the committee. My name is Stephen Elzinga, and I'm the Governmental and Legal Affairs Director for the Secretary of State's office. It's a pleasure to appear before you again today. We'll have to make this a regular occurrence since I think I've done your first two meetings. Secretary of State Dennis Richardson highly prioritizes IT security, and he's made it a high priority, including by hiring an IT security expert as his new Deputy Secretary of State. He's already instructed the IT audits team to do an internal assessment of our own agency, looking at our IT security policies and recommending any necessary improvements. And further, he's also looking to hire two additional IT auditors to expand the number of IT audits of other agency IT systems and help ensure that the CIO's recommendations are being followed, not only in our own agency, but across the entire governmental spectrum. And we understand that SB 90, as currently drafted, it wasn't originally intended to impact the Secretary of State or the Treasurer, but we believe there was a need for a small clarifying amendment to that effect. Our legal analysis is that the current wording exempting the Secretary of State's constitutional duties means that our statutory duties are not exempted. And so we would just appreciate a clarifying amendment to ensure that all portions of the Secretary of State's office and the Treasurer's office are exempted from SB 90, and we're neutral on the bill otherwise if we could just get a clarifying amendment that we believe is consistent with the intent behind the bill. Thank you.
So go ahead, Chelsea.
Chair Riley, members of the committee, my name is Chelsea Broussard, and I'm with State Treasurer Tobias Reed's office. I'm his policy director. I'm here similarly to Steve to just offer our neutrality on the intent of the bill. After speaking with some of the bill proponents and drafters, it seems like the intent was to exempt our office. And our legal counsel brought up some issues saying that it was that some further clarity was needed from their end, or that some further clarity would be nice from their end to just clarify that piece.
Questions? Yes, Senator Perdanski.
So I'm not familiar with the bill. I'm not sure where it actually came from or what work group, but why would we take these two departments or agencies out of being covered by the same requirement that we have for other state agencies and departments?
Well, they're already partly taken out in the bill.
I understand that, but why would we do it in the first place? I mean, who made that decision? Because it seems to me that we find ourselves where we exempt out different agencies from different laws, and I have constituents wondering, why did we do that for this particular one? I mean, why the carve-out? What is the individualisticness of the Secretary of State's office and the Treasurer's office that requires that, or is that just good public policy?
Yeah. Senator Prozanski, I don't know if I am answering your question correctly, but it exempts the constitutional officers, so the bill also exempts the Attorney General's office from the bill.
And if I could add that, Chair Riley, Senator Brzezinski. So the underlying policy rationale is that the Oregon Constitution sets out three statewide elected, independently elected officers, the governor, the secretary of state, and the treasurer. And so the constitutional policy is that each of those elected officers are in control of their own divisions. And so if you were to place the, for example, with the secretary of state's office, we have sensitive auditing information. We might audit the state CIO someday. I don't think we are currently, but we might someday. And it would be a significant conflict of interest to allow the state CIO to have access to all of our data and have control over that. And that it might not be constitutional to have part of the governor's branch or part of the section of the executive branch over the secretary of state or over the treasurer's IT security.
So may I? So your contention is that you're not part of the executive branch. Is that right here?
No. No, we're saying we're separately elected under the Constitution, and so there's a separate, the Constitution creates a checks and balances system within the executive branch, and it trifurcates the power.
Can you point me where in the Constitution it says that that's the case, and other than stating what your duties are, where it says that you're separate? Can you point me to that in the Constitution, please?
I can find it.
Would you please? Too.
Sure, yeah.
Because the way I read it, it just says it enumerates a couple of your duties, but nowhere that I can find does it say that you're separate.
Okay. So. Happy to follow up.
Thank you. Anything else? Thank you very much.
This is just set for hearing, correct?
Yes. There's no vote here. We've got, let's bring up Heath Brown and Jim Gardner.
Good afternoon, Senator Riley. My name is Keith Brown. I work for IBM. I'm a product security officer in our IBM systems organization. I'm also on the board of the TAO, and I co-chair both our cyber lab for the TAO as well as the education foundation called Innovate Oregon.
The acronym, TAO?
Oh, Technology Association of Oregon. I'm sorry.
That's fine. Thank you.
Jim Gardner, representing Microsoft.
Whoever wants to start.
I can start, but it's very brief. Cybersecurity is a core area of expertise and focus for Microsoft, as many of you probably know. And we just simply want to express our strong support for Senate Bill 90 and the concept of centralization of that function within state government. And in particular, we want to express our strong support for the creation of the Oregon Cybersecurity Center of Excellence. There's a similar entity that exists at the federal level under NIST, does excellent work, and we think that the state would benefit highly from passage of this bill and implementation of both the policy of centralized cybersecurity and the creation of a center of excellence.
I absolutely concur with the statements that our friends from Microsoft just made. I think it's very clear to us at IBM, both as cybersecurity professionals as well as being involved in this particular industry, the need for people to have very strong security frameworks, security infrastructure. And I believe the way this bill is structured, it will significantly move the state forward in terms of creating that kind of centralized infrastructure that's significantly easier to manage and significantly easier to protect in terms of a broad range of services that you provide. From the Technology Association of Oregon's perspective, I'm really personally very interested in the Cybersecurity Center. We believe that it is one of the ways, as a technology association, that we can work directly with the universities, directly with the state, and bring private sector into that environment into that collaboration and have a very significant impact, not only on our constituents within the technology association, but quite frankly, with the smaller businesses, especially through the SBC and some other interactions that are starting to coalesce, that would allow us to bring expertise to groups, to people, to businesses that wouldn't be able to get that expertise in other ways. So the Cybersecurity Center of Excellence, I believe, is one of the elements of this bill that is long overdue within the state and will help us drive both economic growth as well as business protections that many of our small businesses wouldn't see in any other way.
Thank you. So the other part of the bill, the structure part, your professional opinion, do you think that it is a good plan to put all agencies of the state government under the same cybersecurity plan?
Mr. Chair, Jim Gardner again. We think that the merits of that in terms of consolidation of expertise, consolidation of, lack of a better word, command and control, outweighs any potential downside.
Let me reiterate that. I work in a group of 14,000 engineers. Mm-hmm. I think the two most important things that I have in my role are the authority to drive action and the responsibility within the organization that's recognized. I believe by centralizing these into a common group, you give someone the authority and the responsibility for driving the changes that are necessary to secure the infrastructure that you have here for the state. And that's both, you know, in terms of data protection as well as protection of the systems that you rely on for your day-to-day business.
Questions? Senator Thatcher.
I think I jumped in prior to
you. Quite right.
I don't know if this would have any bearing on the cybersecurity office that would be made, but it seems I'm just looking at how the state has the data center and how we spend a lot of money on that to keep data, I guess, and backups and all that. But since that time, there's the cloud was built. And is that something that would be under the purview of the cyber, in your view, of the cybersecurity, the Excellence Security Center, Cybersecurity Center of Excellence. Thank you. Gosh, I tripped all over that one. Because it seems like security, the big players out there that provide cloud storage have a really high threshold for security. That's what they do. And I'm wondering if that would, considerations like that would play into such a, a center.
Mr. Chair, Senator Thatcher, excellent question. And I think what you have pointed out is the migration to the cloud is clearly going to continue, accelerate, et cetera. But that, I think, makes it more imperative that the state be on top of that trend and work closely with the private sector to take advantage of the resources that you have pointed out that exist in the private sector in order to optimize the state's cybersecurity profile.
Well, Senator Thatcher, Keith Brown from IBM. I think that let me answer that as an individual versus a member of IBM. Every thing that we do in terms of the security presence has to start with an individual. So a cloud is a service. It's a means to provide services to people. It will not provide necessarily greater security than if I do something in my business, native to my business. So what we need to do with the Center of Cybersecurity Center of Excellence is really educate people that using cloud services is a great way to get services. It's a great way for us to provide services to people that may not get them otherwise. But there's still an inherent need for them to understand how they do their business transactions, how they secure those business transactions, and the responsibilities that they need to have from their laptop or their desktop all the way through the end of their enterprise transactions.
Okay, so what I hear is that it's just part of the whole spectrum of issues to deal with.
I'm sorry. Yes, ma'am. It would definitely give us the ability to make sure that people are thinking about the full spectrum of support and security that they need to cover as part of their business entity and their activity.
One server is no more secure than any other server. It's the security surrounding it, and not only in that data center, which is all a cloud is, but the transmissions back and forth and within our own network before we even get to the cloud. That's all really included in what cybersecurity is all about. Senator Przanski?
Yeah, thank you. So you've heard the testimony of the panel that was before you. I'm very concerned about us doing breakouts. We've seemed to have that problem in other areas, and it's sometimes to get support or get people to stand down, give us this exception. And then we have these, what I call breaks in the system and for security. I'm very concerned as to making certain that we are doing everything across the board, because those two particular offices do have a variance of information about individuals in the state, just like many other departments. And so to me, I want to make certain that we're not setting up something that we're going to have maybe a platinum standard in one place and another standard and somewhere else, and people and their personal information being more at risk. So I guess, is it Mr. Brown?
Yes.
So Mr. Brown, understanding that you probably have worked in other areas jurisdiction-wise and seen other platforms set up, have you seen breakouts like the one that's being suggested as compared to having one umbrella? And then I could understand if you have sensitive data that could be caused for an audit to occur, where you could actually have some type of firewall about not allowing certain people to be able to get into those things. But to me, you still have that uniformity, and we have consistency through this process.
Senator Przanski, I can tell you that I've seen as many variations as you can imagine. I don't believe that necessarily there is a one-size-fits-all. Having a common architecture, though, having a common set of methodologies, practices, is I think, essential to building a strong platform. I think you're always going to, and I won't say always, there are many business reasons, there are many reasons to have anomalies. Mm-hmm. I don't know enough about either of the organizations to tell you whether or not those are valid or not, sir.
Okay.
We deal with those kinds of variations inside of our organizations all the time for a variety of business reasons. So it's not unusual, but you know, you do have to be thoughtful and knowledgeable and cautious about how you implement those and make sure that they are aligned with what you're trying to do from an overall architecture perspective.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'd like to follow up on the question, but I'd like to ask Ms. Ross, regarding the bill itself, was this a creation through a work group, or do you know what how this bill came around?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senator Przanski, no, I don't know.
So, Jim?
Just briefly, Mr. Chair, Jim Gardner from Microsoft. There was an executive order by the governor, which really created, I think, the framework for this bill that itself created a centralization direction. And I think the bill was intended to codify that executive order.
Okay.
That's correct. And the executive order did not include those two organizations, as you know. It's the belief of most of us that, not most of us, as many of many of us, that having one overarching security administrator and one system is essential. And I think cutting anyone out of the in-state government out of this is not a good idea.
So, Mr. Chair, it sounds like the chair is going to maybe want to have a little bit more work done on this.
Yeah.
Okay, because it seems to me it would be nice to have a little bit more work group.
because I think the other question that came up from the discussion with the first panel is if they should have some type of separate system for constitutional duties, if we're continuing to give them statutory authority and duties to do, would we basically want to separate that out as well, or should part of that stay in there? I understand where the chair, it sounds like where you're heading as to what you think is a better approach for global, which at this point I'm not convinced, based on the request for the amendments, that it's in the best interest of the state and the individuals.
Okay. Anything else? Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir.
Dr. Pettit?
Chairman Riley, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Alex Pettit. I'm the Chief Information Officer for the State of Oregon, and I'll let you introduce yourself. You go first.
Chair Riley, members of the committee, my name is Stephan Richards. I'm the State Chief Information Security Officer, and I work for Alex Pettit in the State CIO's office.
Okay. We'll go ahead.
Sure. So I prepared a few notes to give some update on what has happened with the executive order, as was mentioned earlier in testimony. The executive order, a lot of this bill is very related to what Governor Brown issued in the executive order, and we've been executing on that order since September of last year. And I think we've made some real progress, and I just wanted you to hear some of the progress because I think it's relevant to whether we continue in this direction. So one of the first things that we did was we carried out risk surveys across all the agencies, and I think Governor Brown's executive order got extreme attention to this because in a very short time we were able to get over 80% compliance. And when we've done surveys in the past, we get more like about 40%, so quite a significant change in the conduct. With those risk surveys, we then prioritized which agencies we wanted to do our agency-by-agency risk assessments in first, because the governor's executive order directed us to go through every agency. We prioritized the top 20, and we've already worked our way through, again, prioritizing the procurement folks and the agencies to work with us. We've been able to put under state contract 9 different risk assessment vendors using the state CIO's base camp initiative, so we'll be able to continue to contract with them. The contract lasts such that we can do multiple statements of work. And we are using all 9 of those vendors to go through agencies doing risk assessments where we've negotiated the scope with each agency directly. We've gotten 7 of them in motion now and 2 that are basically just pending the signatures. We've already, so that was our first 9, in other words, to line up to each of the 9 vendors. And then we have our batch of the next 5 riskiest agencies. We've already negotiated the statements of work. They've already been drafted, and we're just working with the vendors on what the quotes may be. In addition to that work, so that work is just beginning, and we should get the first set of results this quarter. We've gotten very strong agency participation where we've tried to do risk assessments in the past and met with a lot of resistance. And so I'm very happy to see the help of the agencies with this new executive order. In addition, we took one of the contracts and we've started perimeter scans, so external scanning to understand the risk of our perimeter. And we picked the most risky agencies that had the most risky applications or the best data to get. We've only completed 3 of the, we picked the top 26. We've completed 3 thus far and already found 4 major exposures that we've had to remediate. And so we were already seeing results of that immediately from doing centralized external scanning. Internally, we are also scanning, so that's a sort of, that type of scanning is like what we face every day from the outside attacker. If an attacker were to manage to get inside of our network, like from clicking on a bad email, for example, and get a footprint within the network, we then scan internally. And we've tried to roll this out for a couple of years from our office and gotten we've gotten pockets of support. To date, our goal is currently to get that internal scanning happening at most of the agencies. The target's 80% of the executive branch agencies by the end of this biennium. with this executive order, we've been able to get to date, we've got 34 now agencies currently scanning. And we've got the next 14 already lined up. We've acquired the gear, and we're working on the plan to roll those out as new growth. So that's almost 40 agencies that we'll have probably by, I would say, by early next quarter doing active scanning internally. And this is system by system, deep inspection of what are the vulnerabilities if I was inside. So this is the full picture. I'm authenticated onto the machine, and I see everything. And so we've gotten a much bigger footprint and much quicker way to handle understanding our risk by the act of this executive order, by having the centralized authority. The second part of the executive order has directed us to work on statewide security awareness and training. We've acquired 15 short fun videos that are very accessible to the common person that address one specific issue, and the goal is to have this be put on a private link and be very accessible and put out about one a month, and have everyone working in partnership with the leadership at each agency, have them help push the message each month of having a single video thought about security as an awareness measure. And then in addition, we just closed the procurement to refresh the state's awareness training, which is about 6 years, or basic security training, which is about 6 years old, and that would go through the centralized tracking system, and then the next movement, once we have it, would be to push to 100% compliance across the executive branch. The final piece is working on a plan for remediation, and it has to trail a little bit what we learned from the risk assessments, and as I said, we've just gotten our feet on the ground with those risk assessments. We have already started to build a plan, though, looking at if we addressed state security as an enterprise rather than each individual agency, what things would we best do in the center most efficiently, as well as we're also prioritizing which things the state absolutely have to do now, five things that we absolutely have to do because we're sort of bleeding, looking at our most recent breaches, as well as what we know to be our most current vulnerabilities. And I expect the risk assessment to help inform that. My team has been doing that, and we are in the process of forming a team across all the agencies to come up with that new plan. And I expect that by the middle of next quarter, we should have the draft of that plan that we could socialize. So, just to sum up, I think this executive order has given us incredible traction, and the centralized authority has definitely gotten the attention of agencies, and we've got outstanding cooperation and made great progress.
And so that's half of Senate Bill 90. The kind of frame this, maybe take a step back for a minute to a previous question that was asked. The executive order 1613 was signed by Governor Brown in August?
September
of 2016. And that is half of the bill, Senate Bill 90, is instantiation and statute of the executive order. The executive order actually expires on June the 30th of 2017. So if it's not instantiated, then the folks go back to their agencies and what have you. But at least it will have produced a risk plan and a direction and a prioritization and addressing of some of the more significant problems that are out there. The second thing that it does is establish a center of excellence, as we had spoken of, in partnership with the public and the private organizations that are here to testify as well. What we're hoping that we can do is take more of a community-based approach to security, something that we've not done in the past. Stefan's point, we're only as strong as our weakest link. So even though we had one agency that had very good security profile, because of a penetration by a smaller agency that had a very poor security profile, it put that larger organization at risk. And that was as recently as last September.
Somewhere around there,
around the same time. It was just before, actually. It was one of the reasons why they prompted, I guess it was June or July. It's one of the things that prompted this executive order. And so until we can transform how we view ourselves, until we can transform that we view ourselves as a community rather than as a bunch of little castles with individual things, fire simply doesn't know any boundaries, any property boundaries or whatever. If your neighbor's house is on fire, your house could catch on fire. Cybersecurity needs to be viewed the same way. We've embraced a public health model to that. We've presented that to this committee, I believe, a year ago. But that's really the genesis of this, that as a community, if one of us is sick, then we're all at risk, and we need to look at it in that type of perspective and not just allow those of us that don't have that immunity or don't have the ability to take care of that to go it alone. So with that, we're happy to stand for any questions. So this was a governor-introduced bill is what I'm trying to say. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Senator Brzezinski.
Dr. Pettit?
Yes, sir.
Dr. Pettit, so you heard the testimony before, and what I just took from your testimony now, it seems like one preferred way would be universal with everything under one so we can make certain we have all the checks and balances. Based on the concerns that have been raised by those two agencies or departments, I should say, is there a way that we could actually firewall whatever they find to be sensitive that they prefer not to have able? I mean, to me, it seems like every agency can make the same argument because every agency is going to say they have confidential information or whatever. I know we're going to have some type of additional work group. I'd just like to get something on the record here so I can kind of get some clarity as to what our possibilities are to try to accommodate, but ensure to make certain safety, security is the number one. From what I would think we would be wanting to ensure as compared to allowing silo approach.
Chairman Riley, Senator Brzezinski, thank you for the question. We did intend to, it was the Office of the Governor's intent to provide those, because historically that's how Oregon has operated, is with those two or three constitutionally separated or constitutional elected officials to be separated from authority, oversight of various oversight responsibilities that are either under the Department of Administrative Services or others. We intended to also mirror that in the spirit of consistency. This is how the state has operated since long before I came here, as you can probably tell. Our desire would be to have the Secretary of State's office, the Attorney General's office, and the Treasurer's office to participate in the Center of Excellence, as we're asking for other folks to voluntarily participate in that as well. However, for the executive branch agencies under the subject to the executive order, we're compelling them to participate. If that answers your question, that's how we've kind of divided this. And so we accept things for what they are and what we can change. We invite them to come and participate with us, as we have the universities, and we have letters of support from Mount Hood Community College, from Oregon State University, from other folks. We would invite them to also participate in that spirit. But the ones that we are compelling are indeed those that the 84 agencies that are under the direct authority of the governor.
So, Mr. Chair, I guess just to date myself, when I came here, we had three telephone lines and one IBM memory typewriter in my office. They have a little bit different system, mm-hmm. and it seems to me maybe we should be thinking outside the box of what was the past versus what we have in the future, what we have now and into the future, mm-hmm. and how do we ensure the safety and security.
So, to use my own words against myself, I guess, we do view this as a community. And it is important that security be viewed as a community. And we're being one of the reasons that we asked for the executive order in the first place was because we're being picked off, our smallest, our weakest agencies at a time, and that is jeopardizing our largest and strongest. And so we simply have to fix how this has been going on. We've had several public breaches, as you're perhaps aware of, over the course of the 3 years that I've been here. We have to take a different approach, and a community approach is essential. We're very comfortable asking for that instantiation in the executive branch agencies that have historically been subject to that authority, and we're consistent with how Oregon has worked. We are inviting the rest of the community to participate voluntarily with us, because we will succeed or fail together. That's absolutely correct.
Mr. Chair, one of the things I'd ask the chair to consider in your additional work is what is the cost for having the independent organizations as to the overhead, as to are we actually paying two or three times what would be a universal cost, understanding that we may need to have some other parameters.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Thatcher.
Speaking of things that used to be versus now and how things change, going back to that data center, I've been to the data center, really nice, really good people there. But I was reading an article that something like 80-some-odd percent of corporate data centers are going to be going bye-bye in the next, decade for sure. And so I'm wondering, because of cloud computing, and so kind of talking about that previous question, are we going to continue using the data center and putting in more servers and maintenance, or are we going to look at, I know it's not Ways and Means, but still it always plays into it. Are we going to be looking at maybe we would save money by using the professionals who, the U.S. government uses and, others like that? I just wonder if that would be part of your consideration as, or do you know right on offhand how much you would anticipate going toward cloud computing, or are you thinking that you'd just continue our own corporate data center? I guess that's more of the question.
Chairman Riley, Senator Thatcher, thank you for the question. Yes, we are moving. I mentioned Office 365 as one of the examples that when I'm testified on Senate Bill 87. We do have a plan in motion for moving to Office 365, which would mean we would migrate our existing email services to the Microsoft cloud. We would move our in-place software, our Office in some cases 2004 or earlier even, to Office 365 and other services. We're also in discussions, and we have used a lot of services from other cloud providers for storage, for floor space and what have you. One of the things that is true, and this is an unfortunate aspect of state government, the state data center has very often been the provider of last resort. So there are many software solutions that are used by a lot of agencies that are no longer commercially supported, SQL 2004 or other.
The DMV system. I mean, that's before Fortran 4, I think.
Yes, sir. Fortran 77.
We're replacing
it. I think that's
correct. We're
replacing
it as we speak.
But there are systems that the state, many systems that the state operates, that the payroll system's 30 years old. There are many systems that are very old, and no one to ask someone externally to support them would actually be more expensive than continuing to support them internally, because first of all, the security risk that's associated with it, as well as finding people that have the expertise in it. And so in a lot of cases, we provide the services that, quite frankly, nobody else will provide or nobody would be willing to provide. And there are a variety of reasons for that, and business reasons for that, not technology reasons for it, but business reasons for it. But in the end, our mission is to support the missions of the agencies, and that's always going to be our primary responsibility. As things move forward, just like with our phone systems, however, all of those phone systems are supported externally. The handsets are on the desks, but all of the gear, all of the switches, everything is in the cloud. Is provided by an external provider to us.
Well, I guess I maybe need to clarify.
Go ahead.
What I'm thinking, okay, so cloud computing doesn't always. Oh, sorry, I'm just. Thank you for that. I'm thinking of saving. Like you save, you have your documents you need to save, and you can explain to me because I don't know the answer to this. Do they have to be? Does the software have to be compatible with where you're saving?
No, ma'am.
Backing up through, that's what I'm talking about. Saving, your archives, I guess, if you will, and storage, data storage.
No,
on
ma'am.
The cloud.
You wouldn't need to have it be
compatible with a particular software.
Okay. No, ma'am. A meg is a meg is a meg, as I like to say. So and you can't tell the difference between an IBM Shark or a Hewlett Packard. You don't know what's on the other end of it. It's a Snap server. It's a whatever storage solution that happens to be out there. What you can tell is what we call latency and cost. So how long does it take you to get something back? So in some cases, as an example, where we have forestry locations or Department of Fish and Wildlife locations or other folks that are out in rural Oregon, they actually have servers and storage set up in their local office because the connectivity for those is sometimes poorer than 1 megabit per second. And so because there's no broadband in those locations, they would wait an awfully long time to get their file back. And so we have put, in some cases, very large for forestry, in fact, we have put large servers with large storage caches of maps, of just GIS maps, so that when there's an event, when they have to respond to something, they can pull up the maps very quickly. The system is called Raptor, and it helps coordinate that. But all of the GIS maps and things are on those devices so that are locally close to them so that they can pull it up. If they were being hosted externally to them, even at our data center or at Amazon Web Services or Microsoft, the latency would be intolerable. They wouldn't be able to get their data up. So one of the things that the state does need to do, and I think you'll see us address that soon, is the broadband problem that we face. You know, in some cases we spend a disproportionate amount of money for a very slow connection, but so cloud services are dependent on connectivity.
Dr. Pettit, I think I'm going to break into this conversation because it really isn't germane to the bill we have in front of us.
If I may, Senator Riley, if I can make a couple comments that relate to the bill. I think the bill does help accelerate movement to cloud because by having both within state government, by centralizing the security decision-making, allows us to come up with architectures and solve the problem once. We have today folks that do select into the cloud without a lot of oversight. It's very difficult. And just because the IT functions of security, like the data center is secured, and there are security features, doesn't necessarily mean that you can completely push the security problem to the cloud provider. So things still need to be done in the agency appropriately. And plus, there's the amount of vendor management that you need to make sure that the person that you've paid to do the security is doing it correctly. And I believe that by the centralization, we can get that within state government. And then through the Center of Excellence, we can also accelerate that adoption throughout the state as a way for people to get more secure, as you say. It does help with a lot of the, let's say, the technical aspects, but still there's some policy and people process issues that are that the bill can help. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? So as Senator Przanski pointed out, I think this bill needs some work still. And I'm going to be doing some chatting with some folks to see where we can go and possibly forming a work group. I don't know that that's where we're going to go, but it's something to look at. But for right now, I'm going to, is there someone else who wants to testify about this at this point? Okay, so I'm going to close.
We got two people. They looked at each other, they nodded, and they raised their hands.
Ah,
so hands
come on up. Thank you.
Okay, I'll be right there.
Thank you, Chair Riley, members of the committee. My name is Skip Newberry, President and CEO of the Technology Association of Oregon. I submitted a letter of support on behalf of the organization earlier this week, which lays out some of the reasons why we think it's important that SB 90 move forward, and wanted to cede my time briefly here for Lewis Howell, who's with a startup in Central Oregon focused on cybersecurity, to talk a little bit about his perspective from a small business and individual standpoint and why this bill is important.
Chair Riley and committee, thank you. I'm Lewis Howell, founder and CEO of Huya out of Bend, Oregon, out of Deschutes County. We're a cybersecurity software company, and we're focused on personal privacy and cybercrime prevention. You know, cybersecurity is hot. We all hear about it, you know, day over day. The good is there's good and bad. The bad is we're under attack. The good is we know what to do about it. And I believe this bill is heading in the right direction. The Center of Excellence, from my standpoint, I love the fact that we're talking about collaborating with the community and the state. We have a lot of knowledge. I believe that you have a lot of knowledge as well. And it's just a good connection and good collaboration point. From my standpoint, putting on my CIO hat, Standardizing, centralizing, and integrating is what we all try to do. I've got about 20 years of experience in IT and security, Fortune 10 to Fortune 5000. This is what we do. We try to share information, we try to centralize, we try to bring people together, because now the threats are real. And I believe that this bill, taking off that CIO hat, is about protecting people. It's about our information, all of our information. So I believe that we owe it to the citizens and to ourselves to make sure that we're doing all that we can to protect that information and that data, no matter if it's in the cloud, if it's on a server somewhere out in who knows where. We need to do our best, and we need to bring people to the table. We need to have those conversations, and we can't silo that data and that information. We just don't do that anymore on the enterprise side. So I love seeing this. I love this conversation, too. But there's too much good that can come out of this. And I believe that this bill really does start to move the needle in the right direction. Because from my standpoint as an entrepreneur and also investing in cybersecurity, that's great. That's great for us. But I love to see it. And I look forward to the opportunity to collaborating on this topic as well. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
And with that, I'm going to close this public session, and I'm going to close the committee. Thank you very much. Committee, thank you very much. Session, and I'm going to close the